In the new book, The Ravine, A Family, A Photograph, A Holocaust Massacre Revealed, a single photograph, an exceptionally rare action shot, if you will, documenting the horrific murder of a Jewish family, drives an investigation by Holocaust scholar Wendy Lauer. Wendy Lauer is the John K. Roth Professor of History at the Claremont McKenna College and is author of the National Book Award and National Jewish Book Award finalist for Hitler Furies, which has been translated into 23 languages. Again, the name of the new book is The Ravine, and we welcome Wendy Lauer to the program this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Great to be here.
My understanding is this story goes back to 2009 when you were shown this photograph, which we will talk about. But give us a sense of how ultimately you reacted to it and figured, okay, this was going to be something that was going to eat up the last decade of your life.
Well, it was brought to my attention by two journalists who kind of made this journey to the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C. They had uncovered this photo in what was a kind of former KGB authority, kind of Secret Services archive in the Czech Republic, and didn't quite know what to make of it. And the archivist brought it to my attention because I had written quite a bit on Ukraine. That was my area of expertise. And one thing we knew about the photograph was the location of the crime of the actual image was taken in Mirapol, Ukraine, and we have an actual date, October 13th, 1941, and we had the name of the photographer. So that was kind of our starting point. But when I first looked at it and was really shocked, frankly, by the image, and I know when readers look at the book or look online at the image, they too will be taken back, because here we have something happening. It's an action shot, as it were, of the actual murder of a Jewish family, and these photographs are quite rare. And the first thing that I looked at was the killers, actually. I had been working on a war crimes kind of an investigation of a perpetrator who was still alive in Germany. I've done that kind of work for years, provided some sort of historical documentation for these cases. And so my initial reaction was, these individuals are caught in the act. They're actually murdering this family. The smoke is being expelled or is hovering over the victims' heads. They're shooting, and they are visibly German, in German uniform, and these are local militia next to them, kind of shoulder to shoulder. So, and we could make out some faces of the killers and some insignia on their uniforms.
The photo, and as you mentioned, people can look at the book and they can go online and see the photo, but I'll do my best to describe it, where a shooter's rifle is just inches from a woman's head. There is a cloud of smoke. The woman is bending forward, holding the hand of a boy who is barefoot. And you see ultimately the shins of another child slipping from the woman's lap. One of the things that I want to start with is, as you mentioned, this is rare, but with this documentation of the Holocaust being so vast, there really are no images of a Jewish family at the actual moment of murder. This is rare.
Yeah, there are a few. I had seen others with very scant information about them, unknown location, unknown family, unknown photographer, and they were kind of sitting in the archives, and people had not really undertaken serious research on them. On this particular case, we did have a little bit of information. We did have a starting point. More than a million Jews were gunned down in the ravines and quarries and pits in Ukraine. Most of them have not been identified, certainly most of the children. So having that little bit of information in terms of location and date was enough for me to commit to working on this and to try to endeavor to identify the family, but certainly starting with the perpetrators. They might be still alive. They could be, you know, brought into the courtroom. We could get more information. So that was my first inclination. But yes, we have a lot of imagery from the Holocaust. It was not only the most well-documented genocide, but the most photographed. In fact, the entire Second World War was the most photographed at that time. And so it's a wonderful resource, a wonderful source base of this evidence of these crimes. And the image as we say, you know, 1,000 words in an image. And it turns out there's quite a bit more to be gleaned from this image. Once you kind of pick it apart, which is how I organize the book, that pieces of this image can be studied in depth, whether it's the landscape that's visible, the uniforms I mentioned, the location itself, the terrain, the environmental history, the objects that are pictured in the photograph that provide more clues, the actual picture itself as a photograph, the way it's arranged, and of course the history of the person behind the camera as a witness, as a direct witness to this. So having worked on the Holocaust in these different sources for decades, I also was moved by the fact that a lot of imagery that's out there shows the Holocaust, kind of pictures of Auschwitz-Birkenau, a couple of photos of the actual atrocities against the Jews as victims, whether they're, at gathering points or in ghetto sites, or even these piles of corpses that were when the liberators got to Birkenbelsen or to Dachau and took these images, and kind of look just reflecting on what our entire archive, as it were, of Holocaust photography is and what is being portrayed in what we do have and in those iconic images, and questioning, you know, to what extent we've really figured out what's in those images. A lot of my students will see these images. They can't really tell me much about the history of Auschwitz-Birkenau, but they kind of look at it as a kind of recalling of the history or kind of stand-in for the history. And that also was a concern because I felt like there were missed opportunities to really teach from these photographs the who, what, where, why.
So let us focus on that for a moment. As a historian of the Holocaust, of course, there is debate, as you note, there is scholarly debate about what should or should not be studied or displayed in these graphic images. So with a photo like this and doing what you were doing here, where do you come down on this?
Well, I see a photo, this stark depiction of the culmination of the Nazi, what they call the final solution, which was what genocide scholars refer to as a classic root and branch genocide. That is to exterminate a population, root and branch, the women as reproducers of the race, the children as those branches, so that entire communities are obliterated and no one, in this case, no descendants, no offspring can come back to either identify or, in the case of what the Nazis feared, avenge this mass murder. And, I mean, Hitler said in the summer of 1941 that when he was speaking to his ally, Croatian ally, that the mission of the Nazis once went into the phase of mass murder was to eliminate every Jewish family in Europe. His sense of history was that there had been attempts before in Europe, whether it was back in the 15th century with the expulsion of Jews or history of pogroms, when there was an attempt to kind of remove them from a Christian Europe. And he said, Hitler, and they always come back. And so we are going to do it fully. And that means every family. And he stressed this family unit as essential to full extermination. I mean, this was their racial anti-Semitic thinking. Right. And that also was very evident in this image where we have this kind of family unit. There's a man's jacket on the ground there and his empty shoes. And it seems that, you know, the methods the Nazis were to eliminate the men first. It was very gendered. They were the immediate threat. And then to follow up with full killing of the women and children. So that's also part of this image, the killing of the family as the Nazi ideological aim, the collaborators. We have Ukrainians and Germans shoulder to shoulder. They can't speak the same language, but they have this shared kind of understanding, this shared drive of shared anti-Semitism. And so there's quite a bit to unpack in an image like this.
National Book Award finalist Wendy Lauer is our guest this morning on the Roundtable. The new book is The Ravine, A Family, A Photograph, A Holocaust Massacre Revealed. You say that you had assumed that anyone who took such a shot of a murder must be complicit. So give us a sense, and you've mentioned this a couple of times in our conversation, about how the story of the photographer started to take shape and really became the map for you.
Yes, this is, you know, it's such a difficult photo to study, to even look at, let alone commit to study and research for several years. And, you know, in a way, one of the things that really sustained me in this research was this unfolding story of the photographer, which was such a surprise to me. I immediately assumed when I saw the photo in August 2009, this is taken in broad daylight. It is following the rule of thirds, kind of aesthetically. It's a very composed, stable image. It's taken by someone who knows how to take photos. I determined that the Slovakian who took it was part of a guard, a security unit, a unit allied to the Nazis during the invasion. So here's someone in uniform taking this picture openly, taking it in a very composed way. And so, you know, that could reasonably conclude that this person was part of this, you know, at least complicit in the murder. I mean, the victims would have seen someone potentially with a camera in uniform and felt like that person was part of the humiliation and part of the gang that was there to undertake this killing. But in fact, this picture for this young man, he was absolutely against the war, didn't want to be wearing a uniform, considered himself apolitical, was fed up. He was writing letters to his wife, which I obtained with the help of his family, his descendants. And this was his turning point. So this picture is not about affirming the genocide to the extent that this person who took it agreed with it and was a collaborator like the other killers. He, in fact, was saying this to say enough. And at this moment, he wrote back to his wife, my hair is, you know, I'm having these nightmares. My hair is turning gray. I feel the blackness kind of seeping into my brain. And he was forever haunted by what he witnessed here and went back to his hometown in Slovakia, in Banská Bystrica, and set about, you know, joining the resistance and informing the Jews, this is what's going to happen to you if you go east. He was hiding a Jewish family in his attic. And one of the Jewish men in his attic was a OBGYN and actually delivered his son in 1943. The photographer's name is Lubomir Skrovina, and his son Lubomir Jr. was brought into the world by this Jewish doctor. And so it's the story of resistance that is also part of this photograph.
I mean, it's so fascinating. The photographer died in 2005, but he donated the camera. The camera is in a Jewish museum in his hometown.
Yeah, that was one of his last kind of acts before he died. The Soviet Union had collapsed. There was a renewed kind of a more of an open approach and interest in the history of the Holocaust. There was in the 90s restitution efforts, the opening up of archives. So it was a kind of new era of trying to get at the truth of what happened. In my own travels to Ukraine in the summer of 92, I was really struck people just kind of coming out of these Ukrainians, you know, witnesses coming to me saying, this is what I saw, what happened to my neighbor. Now I can finally talk about this. And so at this moment of the growth of the field, as well as ordinary people coming out to tell the truth of what happened, our photographer, he carried out his own kind of journey to the Museum of the History of Jews in Bratislava and kind of dutifully brought in his camera. But in the letter that he wrote to the museum, he specifically asked that it be used in a display on the history of the Holocaust, which has not happened yet. And he specifically wrote in his letter to the museum that it's important that people see this photograph because it shows Ukrainian collaboration in this stark way of actually participating in the mass shooting.
You ultimately went to the crime scene, correct?
Yes, twice.
And what was that like? And I mean, you obviously detail this in the book, but of what you find there that really sets you off in a whole other direction, too.
Well, I was really surprised when I went there. First, I went there on my own and found one of the mass shooting sites in the town of Mirapol. There were about 1,000 Jews in the town. It was a classic kind of shtetl, historically located in the former Pale of Settlement, where Jews were confined by the in the Russian Empire. So I first went there in 2014, and a local person brought me to one of the killing sites. And then when I went back in 2016 with more documentation in my hands and actual maps from investigations, I was actually able to go to the site pictured in the photograph. It looks like a ravine in the photograph, but in fact, that was a mass grave that was dug by the local Ukrainian population and some Jewish men who were immediately killed. So with this team of Yahad and Nunim, when we went to this site in June 2016, we were able to go there with actual, you know, Ukrainians who witnessed what happened that day in the photograph, or who actually kind of contributed, were requisitioned, were forced by the Germans and the Ukrainian militiamen to do the grunt work, to dig the pit, to actually clean up the area, because these were horrific scenes. So they were there to take the Jewish clothing, take, you know, cover the pit, and also with the militia there, actually any Jews who tried to crawl out and escape, like participate in that, the hunt, as it were. So those local Ukrainians who knew, including the militiamen pictured in the photo, knew these Jewish families, knew some of them by name. There were about 18 Ukrainians in Mirapol today who could testify to that, who could describe what happened, who could talk about their former Jewish neighbor, sometimes by name. These were Ukrainians who also obtained the houses of Jews who had been killed and some of their personal belongings, and could describe that. So this was part of the piecing together of the story. Probably most disturbing was while we were at the site itself. We were standing there and looking, and I had done some research on the topography of genocide and realized the landscape was a kind of moonscape. It had, the vegetation was had been disturbed, the way the landscape was shaped. There was these haloing kinds of mounds and depressions, and it was pretty much a mess. And so we were standing there, and we reached down and we just started to move the earth and kind of with our hands and feet and walk around. And we actually uncovered the bones of the victims. We uncovered fragments of vertebrae and of skull fragments, because in the late 80s, probably one of the last trials in the former Soviet Union, and certainly one of the last that led to convictions, these Ukrainian policemen pictured in the photograph were actually tracked down and indicted and convicted, and two of them were executed for carrying out this mass murder. And when they did this investigation, the Soviets, the KGB, they disinterred, they exhumed the grave so that they could have the evidence of the actual victims. And in doing so, really just disturbed these graves and destroyed some of the remains, and it was really disturbing because, of course, this was a complete violation of Jewish religious law and really just offensive to our sensibilities in terms of not only the violation that was done in the murder, but the violation as far as the right to a proper burial.
The name of the new book is The Ravine by Wendy Lauer. The book is published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. You point out in the book that so when the Germans evacuated Mirapol in late 1943, they left most of their Ukrainian police collaborators behind to contend with the Red Army liberators. So when the fact that you are able to know what happened, that the fates are known of the people in the photograph, identified, and then what happened to them?
Yeah, I've seen an image like this. This is not the way the victims wanted to be portrayed. This is also another, it's a denigration of them. In this case, the victims are actually clothed. We have other imagery of victims because the Nazis forced them to strip, and they actually confiscated their clothing and repurposed it. In this case, they are clothed, and the woman has this polka-dotted dress and shoes on, but it's at the act of murder, and you know, ethically very problematic as far as even publishing something like this. But I really felt compelled to try to restore. I wanted to know what happened before, during, and after in a way to kind of break the frame of this photograph, in my sense of the victims, that the story, the full story, this is, we couldn't leave it in this way, in this frozen state of their last moments of life, and how horrible that was for them. And so that was the endeavor there, to really find out who are the people in the photo, the victims, number one, you know, who are the perpetrators, can they be brought to justice? And what's the fate of all of these people, right? We can't bring back the victims, but what happened to these killers, and what are their biographies? So we identified the Ukrainian victims. There was justice there. The West Germans there were not policemen, were not SS, were not military. They were customs guards. They volunteered to do this. This was not what they were trained to do. And in 1969, one of those customs guards walked into a police station in a small town near Hanover, Germany, in January, and said, "I'd like to report a crime." So I found that file from a local police station. Astounding. They misplaced the location of the crime, but here was someone who decades later had some sort of, you know, a conscience, some sort of remorse, and got it down on paper, and this then initiated a full-on investigation of this unit. And so the Germans in this photograph were actually, one of them was questioned. Now, nobody had this photograph. It was sitting in Prague, right? So you have various investigations, but not based on the photograph that, you know, we have here, which would have clearly been very important for the case. So these Germans in here, I'm reading their testimony, and they're just lying about being there, about the shooting, about who was doing the shooting, about the event itself. And it was just, you know, confirming how much the killers, you know, had no qualms about perjuring themselves and lying. And had this picture surfaced in 1969, we would have had a different outcome on the West German case.
You have unearthed so much and found so much out about this photograph. Do you still have questions? Are there still things that you still haven't answered to your satisfaction?
Well, I was frustrated in the end by not being able to, with 100% certainty, identify the victims. And very difficult. We can't see their faces. There's, you know, of the 1,000 Jews in Mirapol, about 450 were listed by name. So I was already dealing with partial evidence with victims' names. And as much as I endeavored, and it took years, and I came very close, I actually met someone who might have been a cousin of one of the children in the photograph, and interviewed that a survivor, but she was young during the war, so she couldn't really identify. She had been evacuated the Red Army. So that the fact that I couldn't do that when I really wanted to gave me so much pause, and I started to think about the fact that we still have a million victims who have not been identified. Every fourth victim who was murdered in the Holocaust resided in the territory of what is Ukraine today. And most of those children, you know, have not been named. And the reality is that genocidaires, this is their mission, is to exterminate and to completely erase populations from history and from memory. And when an entire community is wiped out like this, with no attestation, no documentation as such, you know, who's going to come forward to claim them as missing? These are the missing, and there are no survivors to actually register them as missing. So this is what the genocidaires seek to achieve, and doing this kind of work is my way as a historian and a human being to try to point that out and work against it by at least documenting that this is what happened to this family, and these are the people who did it, and this is where it happened.
The name of the book is The Ravine, A Family, A Photograph, A Holocaust Massacre Revealed. The book is published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. Wendy Lauer, thank you so much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is The Ravine by Wendy Lauer. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.